Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting of the Housing Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Houseman.
Present.
Howard. Howard. Tice.
Present.
McBadgett.
Present.
Bliss, excused. Gomez.
Present.
Hassan.
Hassan is present.
Heinrich.
Heinrich present.
Herr. Herr. Juergens.
Juergens present.
Olson.
Present.
Barr.
Present.
Ryer.
Present.
Right. Howard.
Present.
Perfect. Madam Chair, we do have a quorum.
Thank you. Next order of business is approval of the minutes from Tuesday, March 16th. Representative Howard, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have. So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Howard moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? If not, members, please unmute yourselves for a voice vote. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. We first of all have House File 1916. Representative Tice, would you like to move your bill?
I would, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Representative Tice moves that House File 1916 be brought before the committee and this bill will be laid over. Representative Tice, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. After talking to several folks, especially in my community and some of the other greater Minnesota cities, we realize that not only do we have a homeless need, but we also have workforce housing and just to bring other people into our communities. I was talking to Mayor Fabian, and some of his things that he's doing this year is trying to get a multi-family unit built. It's going to be a smaller unit because Roseau isn't that big. But what they're trying to do is bring people in just to see the community, to see what the jobs are available. They've got DigiKey and Polaris especially. And they're really looking to just show them what they can have if they move up there in, I would say, a pretty darn cold place. He's also talking about workforce housing. And I know in St. Cloud, I know in some of the other communities too around us, they really have an issue with where are they going to house folks. We've got so many places that are looking, but we've got a lot of manufacturing around us as well. And with that, I'm not going to say any more because I'm afraid I'll start sneezing, and I'll turn it over to either Chad or Scott, whichever one is going next.
Thank you. We have Scott McMahon from the Greater Minnesota Partnership. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Great, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Scott McMahon. I'm the Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Partnership, and I'm honored to be back before this committee to talk about housing in Greater Minnesota. If you'll recall from my testimony a few weeks ago when I kind of gave the overview of the challenges and opportunities we have in Greater Minnesota, two things that I highlighted. One is that we do have a pretty significant workforce housing shortage in a number of our communities. And a lot of that is driven by just the market realities that we face in Greater Minnesota, where when you look at the construction costs that we face, often the value of a newly built house is less than that construction cost. And so financing and getting that project built is really challenging. The reality that we face in a lot of our communities, though, is that we have houses in our communities that aren't lived in anymore, but aren't part of the housing stock because they've come under disrepair. And, nobody's living in them. They can't live in them. But if we could get them back into the housing stock, they'd be a perfectly appropriate house for somebody. But the challenge we face is that low value of that house plus the fix-up cost that the community would face, again, exceeds what that house would be valued at when it's done. And so we just have real challenges trying to get those houses taken care of. And so what ends up happening more often than not is that house either continues to stand and falls further into disrepair, or gets bulldozed and we just lose the property. So what this program would do would provide grants to cities to put in some of the capital that's needed to bring that house back up to a livable standard and to get it back into our housing stock. And the reality is when you look at the various government programs that could be there, one of the lowest cost, if not the lowest cost program that we could have to get new housing available is to put that minimal cost into an existing property that's not used and get it back in the pipeline. So this program would provide $5 million into a grant program for cities in greater Minnesota. It would cap investments per property at no more than $50,000 and no more than $200,000 per city. We think that this would have a really significant impact on the cities that would be able to access this program and would be able to get a number of those houses that, again, are just sitting there vacant right now back into our pipeline and available for families to move into. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions, but I know Chad Adams from the Southwest Minnesota Housing Partnership can provide greater insight into how an investment like this would actually play out once it's on the ground.
Yes, we also have Chad Adams from the Southwest Minnesota Housing Partnership. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Good morning, Chair Helfman and members of the committee. I'm Chad Adams, the CEO of the Southwest Minnesota Housing Partnership. We've got offices in Slayton and Mankato, Minnesota. And we are a nonprofit community development corporation that provides a full continuum of housing services from housing education and counseling all the way to single family and multifamily development, including new construction and acquisition of properties, and long-term asset owner for a lot of those multifamily properties as well too. I've been the CEO for the partnership for about 2 years and previously served about 20 years in city government management, most recently in Albert Lea, Minnesota, where I worked with a lot of different stakeholders on workforce housing needs in Southeast Minnesota as well. So I've got some perspective and insight from Southwest, South Central, and Southern, Southeastern Minnesota as it relates to workforce housing. So really want to kind of talk a little bit mostly about the need for workforce housing and how this fix-up fund might specifically help homeowners. And to share some statistics with you if you haven't seen those yet. I should also note that I was also elected as the co-chair of the Homes for All Coalition this past year. So I'm representing over 270 endorsing organizations throughout the state as well too. As it relates to the fix-up fund, we are in regular contact with communities on a daily basis throughout our region on workforce housing needs. And workforce housing oftentimes, if not always, comes up as the most significant need that a community needs. And some of the barriers that Mr. McMahon mentioned are critical to trying to remedy, particularly with that affordability gap and the appraisal gap, which I can speak to a little bit more. But the aging housing stock of homes is also just a growing issue. And despite the extraordinary demand for new single-family homes throughout the Southwest and South Central regions that we serve, the rehabilitation of homes are critical to meeting the workforce needs in greater Minnesota and really do remain more economical than building new construction, particularly with the pre- and post-pandemic rise in construction costs, which I'm sure you've heard a lot about. Rehabbing the homes will also help communities preserve their tax base and avoid substandard nuisance properties from being established that ultimately decrease the market value of neighboring properties, but also becomes very expensive for taxpayers to pay for the demolition of such dilapidated homes. And I've got a lot of experience with that working in the municipal field and cities having to go in and go through that process and spend oftentimes $20,000 to $50,000 to take down one specific home that's become dilapidated. It'd be best if we could preserve those housing projects into the pipeline as Mr. McMahon mentioned. And according to some statistics recently published by the Minnesota Housing Preservation Partnership, 40% of single family homes were built before 1970 throughout the entirety of the state. Just in the southern region of the state, which represents South Central and Southeast Minnesota, that number increases to 46%. However, there has been a fair amount of new construction in Blue Earth and Olmsted counties, which are in that region. You take those two counties out, you look at counties like Martin, Faribault, Maurer, and Freeborn, 60% of the homes in the counties, the remaining counties, have been built before 1970. The same thing in the southwest region of the state, where there's 18 different counties represented. They're amongst the highest in the entirety of the state with homes that are built prior to 1970. So it just emphasizes a need for ongoing rehabilitation and repair. And I should also just note that there needs to be a new funding source and program that has a quick turnaround for meeting some of these needs. There are some other existing programs out there throughout the state, but oftentimes they take a fair amount of time to go through the process. It might be 2 years down the road until the property owner or owner of that home actually sees a benefit. So there is need to get some more funding in the pipeline, but also to diversify the tools that are out there specifically. As Scott had mentioned earlier, a big significant barrier is the appraisal of some of these homes in greater Minnesota. We're oftentimes finding either for a new construction or even for a rehabbed home that the appraised value is $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 less than what it is the cost to construct that home and list it or to basically repair that home and put it back on the market. So I just really wanted to emphasize that today. And certainly I'm open to a lot of questions about the other broader challenges and needs with workforce housing in greater Minnesota. I have testified before this committee about a month ago on construction cost, appraisal challenges, construction trade shortage, just the lack of availability of workforce development, housing, affordable housing needs, and administration fees that oftentimes developers have to pay for a lot of these projects, which I don't view to be a significant challenge in the entirety of the barrier of building homes, rehabbing homes in greater Minnesota. But specifically, I just want to just kind of pause and just take any questions to see if you have any other perspectives or insights that you want me to share from greater Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, do we have any questions for either the testifiers or for the bill's author? Mr. Worth?
Yes, Madam Chair. Representative Ryer has a question.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this question is either for Representative Tice, and thank you for bringing this forward, or for either testifier, whoever it makes most sense. I guess I'm wondering if, first of all, if the $50,000 cap is sufficient to bring the properties up to the standard that they would need to be, or if that would also require other local investment or other funds. And also, I was struck by the comment that cities are and towns are spending $20,000 to $50,000 to tear down dilapidated structures. Is there a regulatory or legal barrier to using those funds to instead invest in the property? And are there different ways to think about that? Thank you.
Either Mr. McMahon or Mr. Adams, who wants to step up?
Well, Madam Chair, I think Mr. Adams might be better equipped to address the second part of the question. But as to the first part of the question on the $50,000 cap, you know, we're trying to see what would happen with an investment opportunity like this. And, you know, our general sense is that if it's going to be more than $50,000 to do it, we may in fact be better. If it needs that much work on the house, we may in fact be better off removing that house. But also with the cap of $50,000, it allows us to spread that investment into more communities and have a bigger impact on the total number of properties rather than limiting the number of properties that can be brought back online.
Thank you. Mr. Adams, do you have a sense of the other question, what other local funding sources?
Yes, and Madam Chair and members of the community, there aren't a lot of other local funding sources that have been set aside by communities. I don't disagree that some of that funding could be set aside into more preservation, but I do believe that most cities are doing that already when they're pairing that with the Small Cities Program. But that's why there's such a critical element and need here, because there's so much demand, and that Small Cities Program is not meeting the entirety of the need. So this fund will be a little more direct and appropriated to the direct needs and would be a little more efficient, in my opinion, to avoid those cities from having to spend those $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 costs on demolition. They could spread that out amongst a number of homes, whether it's support from private investment or other public investment or other grants from the state as well, too. So it would additionally help the leveraging of other capital being brought to the table, whether it's private or public.
Representative Ryer, follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say that I really like seeing new approaches and thinking on how to preserve the NOAA resource in across the state, both metro and non-metro. I appreciate your focus here. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Representative Tice.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to put my two cents worth in because after the Great Recession, I think it was 2010, 2011, totally, we did about 13 homes, and we bought them anywhere from 20,000 to 50,000, and then put in mostly windows, roof, insulation, doors, just making sure that the house was tight and efficient. And most of the time we could do that really reasonably. So I think 50K is a really good place to start. But I think our cities are also recognizing that we don't have the inventory and that we can do it. One of the homes we got, I mean, we bought it for 20 grand. It had a lot of mold and different things into it. And we gutted the whole thing, but we sold it. You know, we put maybe 50 or 60 into it, but we sold it at a really nice price because it was a super nice house. And we were getting a lot of questions from realtors. In fact, yesterday I got a call from a realtor friend of mine, and he knows we have some rentals. He wants to know if we want to sell, because right now is a good time to sell. There isn't a lot of housing. So I think this is a really good time to have something like this out there. Cities are looking for homes, and I think, you know, we can do quite a bit with 50K, with 50,000. But I think that just putting it out there shows the need, and I think we'll get a good response from it. I know a lot of friends that would take advantage of it. Thank you.
Further questions, Mr. Ward?
Madam Chair, there are no other questions in the queue at this time.
Representative Tice, do you have final comments?
Just thank you, Madam Chair, for letting me have the opportunity to have this bill heard and considered to go into the housing bill. I think it is a need, we know that, and just really appreciate it. Thank you.
And this will, 1916, it will be laid over. Now we have House File 1282, Representative Cagle. The chair moves that House File 1282 be brought before the committee, and this bill also will be laid over. Representative Cagle, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 1282 is an appropriation to help with with infrastructure in manufactured housing communities. Aging and failing infrastructure systems in manufactured housing communities pose the biggest threat to closure and displacement of homeowners across the state. And most of these infrastructure systems were built 50 to 60 years ago and nearing the end of their useful life. The legislature established the MH Infrastructure Fund in 1917 and authorized the use of housing infrastructure bonds for the purpose of replacement of failing systems in 2018. I'm going to have to check my notes and make sure that was really 1917. That seems like a long time ago. The legislature provided $2 million in funding for this purpose in 2019 with an annual base appropriation of $1 million annually. This bill would increase that funding to $3 million a year, and this fund can award grants to any owner of a manufactured housing park that provided that they abide by the contract requirements established by the MHFA. Victoria Clark from North Country Cooperative Foundation will address this proposal. NCF was a primary proponent of the original legislation. And I would note that the preservation of manufactured housing communities is the most cost-effective housing strategy that the state can enact. And I did get a text from Jed Nelson. It was 2017, not 19. Yes.
I was going to guess that was that case. So we have, are you ready for the testifier?
Yes, Madam Chair.
So Victoria Clark from the North Country Cooperative Foundation is here. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Victoria Clark. I'm the Executive Director at North Country Cooperative Foundation. And we've been active in the manufactured housing sector since 2004. When we completed our first conversion of a manufactured home community working with the residents of Sunrise Villa Cooperative in Cannon Falls, Minnesota. That was our first manufactured home community that we worked with. And since that time, we've converted 9 manufactured home communities to co-op ownership across the state, serving a little over 700 households. And before I launch into my testimony, I do want to make a shout out to the Manufactured Housing Working Group, which is a bipartisan, bicameral group of legislators, including Representative Cagle, who has really championed the reforms and the preservation programs for manufactured housing across the state. That group has been absolutely instrumental in both the creation of this and establishment of this fund that we're talking about today in 2017. and many other efforts. So I want to thank all the legislators that are part of that work. As Representative Cadle mentioned, one of the biggest challenges facing manufactured home communities across the state is aging infrastructure systems. All manufactured home communities, predominantly all the infrastructure systems, including water, sewer, roads, electrical, is all privately owned. So these are like little small cities, and many of them built in the 1950s and 60s. So they're reaching the end of these systems if they haven't been rehabilitated and maintained over the years, are reaching the end of their useful life. And the failure of these systems is the primary cause of community closures, which we have seen an uptick in since the state started tracking those closures. I believe they started tracking park closures in 2015, 2005, if I'm not mistaken. And our organization has personally worked with our client co-ops to complete over $4 million worth of infrastructure improvement projects, including two most recently, one in Medelia, Minnesota, one of our co-ops in Medelia, and one in Worthington, Minnesota. Those projects were funded through the first round of funding from this Manufactured Housing Infrastructure Fund. So we're already putting these dollars to good use in preserving these systems and the affordable housing that they support. And we do have $5 million in our own pipeline across our portfolio of co-ops that we support, over $5 million worth of infrastructure improvements that are necessary. So just in our existing portfolio, we have enough projects to for many years. And I think that the best example of the need for an increased appropriation into this fund really is demonstrated by the sheer amount of applications that were received by Minnesota Housing in the first round of proposals. That first round of funding was issued in fall of 2020. And the funding awards were made in just before the holiday, the holiday break in 2020. And Minnesota Housing received 9 applications, funding proposals to that first round, of which there was $2 million available in that first round of funding. And the agency received over $5 million worth of applications. The agency was able to approve funding for $2.6 million, even though there was $2 million available. With the work of the Manufactured Housing Working Group a couple of years ago, we received expansion of the housing infrastructure bonds. So the agency was able to do a bond sale of $600,000 to go over and above the $2 million that they had in that appropriation for that fund. So they were able to stretch it across those 5 proposals. 2 of those projects funded were in our resident-owned communities, which I mentioned in Medelia and Worthington, and 3 were for privately owned communities. So, the needs are great across the state, regardless of the type of ownership, and this fund serves them all equally. So a great amount of need and serving communities across the state. It's worth mentioning that in addition to bringing dedicated resources to these types of projects, we also need to address the timeliness of being able to access these funds. Right now, the RFP schedule for this fund is scheduled for once a year, which makes it challenging, especially for new projects. This is something that we're in conversations with Minnesota Housing about, but it's worth mentioning that. And that's the case for a lot of these appropriated funds for particular types of projects across the state, is the timeliness of when we can access the funds. And once a year RFP schedules make it challenging for developers for obvious reasons when they're working on a time-bound project. And with that, I'll thank you for hearing this important bill. And we look forward to working with our existing and future client co-ops to put these dollars to good use, improving these infrastructure systems, and in doing so, improving the quality of life for hundreds of low-income homeowners across our state. And I look forward to any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Mr. Worth, do we have committee members? This would be questions of either the bill author or the testifier. Mr. Worth.
Yes, Madam Chair. Representative Ryer has a question.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Cagle, for bringing this bill forward. I think it's really timely to make sure that we can keep these communities as communities and let them get restored and flourish. My question is about whether we are considering the creation of new communities. I've heard, I am not recalling any testimony about that over past hearings, but it seems to me that it's an affordable option for expanding existing housing or the whole housing stock. My in-laws have lived in manufactured housing for decades. I've seen the deterioration, but I've also seen the benefits, and so we'd be interested in how we can leverage this whole approach. Thank you.
Representative Cagle, do you want to take that, or would you like your testifier to?
Madam Chair, I think I'd like to address one piece of it and then let my testifier address the other. I think the thing that we, manufactured housing is affordable housing if we can get it to real property status, I guess, or, you know, make sure that we can have, right now, the people with who are looking to buy a manufactured home don't qualify for traditional housing lending. And so it makes it it more expensive. Even though it is an affordable housing product, the terms of the loans are not affordable. And so I think, you know, if we can start to address some of those issues, I could see in the future that more, manufactured home communities would pop up because it would be a more attractive housing option for people. And I don't know if Ms. Clark has anything to add on that.
Ms. Clark, do you have further to add?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, Representative Cagle is right on with the need to, make reforms to how manufactured housing in a land lease setting, so in a park setting, in a community setting, where you don't own the land, and improving that. And we are working, this committee heard a bill to reform how manufactured homes in a resident-owned community are titled. So we're hopeful that that gets passed this year, because that's a critical part of the piece of the puzzle here. And so if we're successful in achieving those reforms this year, like Representative Cagle, I suspect that it's going to make the value proposition for the creation of new manufactured home communities far more attractive. It's a very affordable option. We're in conversations with several municipalities and different HRAs across the state about this approach. So we're excited to do a new project. We're just looking for the right piece of land and pulling the pieces together on the single family finance side related to that title reform. But yes, we're raring to go to do a new project, and hopefully we'll have more to report next year this time on a new manufactured home community project that's a co-op right out of the gate. The last community that was actually established and developed in Minnesota, I believe, was in the early 1990s. So we're due for a new construction project of a new manufactured home community.
Follow-up, Representative Ryer?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
And further questions, Mr. Ward?
Madam Chair, there are no other questions in the queue.
Are there final comments from Representative Cagle?
Just want to thank everybody for hearing this. I think this is vital to make sure that we keep that stock of affordable housing as the previous bill was talking about. And so would appreciate all your members' support.
And House File 1282 will be laid over. Thank you. Now we have House File 1416. Representative Hassan, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Hassan moves House File 1416, and this bill will also be laid over. Representative Hassan, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For many, this CARES part of 2020-2021 crisis has been how quickly it laid bare the structural flaws in our society, whether it's economic justice, social justice, or racial justice. PIPI communities across the state were caught in between two pandemics, COVID-19 and racial inequities that left many people in the PIPAC communities behind. I cannot put enough emphasis the importance of stabilizing neighborhoods, communities, and supporting everyone to have a place they call home. We have heard over and over the gaps around home ownership between PIPAC communities and white communities. We also know that home ownership comes with plenty of benefits, including but not limited to wealth creation. Research indicates that children who grew up in a family that owns their home do better in school than children whose families are bouncing from one neighborhood to another. We are in the midst of housing crisis, and we need all hands on deck solutions. House File 1416, which is a bill that provides $5 million from the general fund for a grant via Minnesota Housing Finance to the One Family, One Community to establish a program to acquire vacant or foreclosed properties that may be used for residential housing purposes, and to prepare, to pre-design, design, and construct or renovate housing to be sold to persons with an income less than 50% AMI, with priority given to 30% AMI. With that, Madam Chair, I have two housing advocates who will explain to us how important this program is and how it can help our communities. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I have Melita Timmons first for One Family, One Community. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Melita Queen, Melita Timmons. I am the executive director and founder of One Family, One Community.
Continue.
I would like to just mention how important it is for this bill to be recognized and passed. And I would like to thank Representative Hodan for supporting us. This matter is a very serious matter for us, particularly on the north side of Minneapolis. We are aware that there is a housing crisis, and we're asking that we take vacant and foreclosed properties and bring some value and some access and equity to the community. We could do this by taking some of those properties which are at CPED. There is a list of vacant properties there, and we would like to take those properties and also create and establish a no interest loan, such as what Habitat had originally had in their program, and also work with families whose credit scores may be low. We also would like to work with families that wanted to do contract for deed, as that would from MHFA has stated that they would also create such a first time home buyers advantage. And so we want to be able to put people into homes. We understand that we started with 120 people in encampments, and now that number has rose to 2,200. And so we would like to this bill to be considered, because we believe that there is such a housing crisis that it will help our housing stock that is already there and help put families into a affordable and safe place. Also, the impact on these communities with these houses that are just sitting blight in our community, we've noticed that West Havenbrook was able to come from that list that CPAD has and take 400 houses and put those houses into Renter's Warehouse. There we begin to see some rent gouging going on, where people that, you know, work two and three jobs aren't able to really have any access, and they weren't even able to become renters with rents that were astronomical. So we would like to have that considered, that is a disparity caused when people are thinking about home ownership and trying to move the gamut just a little bit for African American people. And we like to also consider that rehabbing and construction from those places, from that vacant list, probably is ideal for people to come in and put sweat equity with that. I've also brought Coach Jamil from Change Equals Opportunity, because we have worked with Jamil Jackson in the past. And so we've already started doing small developments in the community. And so I would like to also ask that he be heard, and also Mr. Todd Grimes from Black Lives Matter.
Okay, I have Todd Brannens, Minnesota resident. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, for giving us this opportunity. My name is Todd Brannens. I'm a graduate from the University of Minnesota, and I have 2 degrees, one in economics, one in management, emphasis in finance, and I am the leader of Black Lives Matter. This is a crucial moment for our community, especially BIPOC, Black Indigenous People of Color, having an opportunity to have access and creatively have funds appropriated so we can truly help our people. These rehab homes that are all through Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the entire state, they are limited, but there are other entities that do have access to homes that are sitting that we can renovate and give opportunity. So essentially what this program allows for is effectively finding a way where we can help people become homeowners and utilizing the current housing stock, the opportunities that are there with homes that were currently built in like around the 1970s. Also understanding that it is cheaper to actually fix these properties rather than bulldoze them. It's the opportunity cost. So this program specifically addresses that, focusing on people who are at 30% AMI as a very big piece of this, because what we're running into is family members that are down at the Dorothy Dare in a homeless situation where they have multiple paychecks that they can cash or what have you, but they're saving them to show proof that something's holding them back. So we've created a kind of plan where we will find those people and assess those people's needs. This program is intended to help at least between 20 to 50 families. This ask is not very high, but it's also something, a creative way where we can truly help our communities find that balance of stable housing. Stable housing in our African-American community has just been obliterated by COVID-19. And as we see that, the statistics really go show to prove that. The only real true way of helping our people is like housing is a cure. This is an opportunity to give people in the community hope and show them that sweat equity as we see an uptick in crime. I do know for a fact that having an opportunity for people to become homeowners, show pride in their community, and have stable housing is the pioneering piece of bringing success back into communities and prosperity within communities. And it is a crucial time for legislature to truly hear out, you know, the outcry of other community about how this program in and of itself stands alone in the aspect of giving youth hope. So there's been initiatives over in North Minneapolis as well, along the lines of guns down, hammers up, utilizing youth to show them how to finish a house, what that means, and remodel these homes and get them out of these current situations where there's bad environment involved and getting them into something positive. And we've uniquely been able to do such a thing through this kind of idea. And so now we just want to take it to another level. And so this would allow more funding to help us directly, effectively take youth and other adults alike to teach them the ropes on how to become homeowners, but also give them hope, because a lot of the COVID-19 restrictions have allowed for people to have to separate. And so the normal things that kids would do in the community, like play basketball, play with their friends, play sports, all of those things have now been limited. This is also like a mindset thing of allowing us to social distance and rehab these properties in such a way we creatively are doing it to incorporate people that live in that community. The idea of having a deed for sale and offering this to community members is crucial, because then they can work on their way to home ownership. And that's the kind of longevity behind this program, is to for people in their certain communities to be able to have a stake in that, and then also have build pride in that, and to help uplift these communities, any community that truly is struggling with housing.
Does that conclude your testimony?
Conclusion of what you know I would like to say. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. And now we have Jamil Jackson from Change Equals Opportunity. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
CEO, which stands for Change Equals Opportunity. Our focus is on the mentorship of males of color aged 12 to 25 in the areas of education, employment, and life skills. I am also a consultant for the City of Minneapolis Office of Violence Prevention.
Do you have a little more volume that you can give?
Oh, there we go. Is that better?
A little better.
Okay, I'm sorry. I am also a consultant for the Office of Violence Prevention, and I am a teacher within Minneapolis Public Schools with the Office of Black Male Student Achievement. I'm here to testify on behalf of this bill because I believe it is very instrumental for our community to get some assistance with housing for our youth and our families in need. As it's been spoken on and testified before me, there's a strong need in our community for housing for our youth. The biggest piece that we face in the community of violence prevention is that of housing. A lot of our youth are running around in the streets with nowhere to lay their head at night, nor a way to create an income that allows them to be sufficient enough to sustain housing. I myself, through my organizations, we only hire youth and felons, and we use interior remodeling. I own an interior remodeling business. We use that as a way to mentor youth, to teach them about entrepreneurships, generational wealth, and just life skills in general. The biggest conversations that I have, again, are about homelessness and where to sleep at night. We spend a lot of our money, myself and Queen, on renting hotel rooms for these families and these young people who can't find stable housing because of their track records or because of their inability to raise enough money for the price of rents that are spiking out of control. I believe that this bill will allow us not only to open the door for more home ownership of our younger people to create that generational wealth. But being being a contractor, I'm seeing these houses that do have equity in them being sold off market before they're even allowed for general public to see, for our community to invest in those properties and to be able to get that equity and gain generational wealth. So I truly believe that this will be a benefit for our community holistically, moving forward, to stop crime, to create generational wealth, and to allow our families to see the fruits of their labor as it relates to home ownership. And I'll end there.
Thank you for your testimony. And members, are there any questions of either our testifiers or the bill's author? Mr. Worth?
Madam Chair, Representative Howard has a question.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hassan, and to the testifiers for bringing a really innovative bill forward. And it just strikes me how much it hits on many of the sort of values that we care about in terms of creating opportunities for our youth, while also creating pathways to home ownership, in particular for our BIPOC communities. And I just wanted to make a comment about an article I read in the paper this morning that focused on the current home ownership market. I believe the headline said it's insane because of just how many, just the mismatch of supply and demand, and how any sort of house that's coming on the market is getting dozens of offers, the price is being driven up. And I just had a conversation with some realtors this week that talked about what a challenge this is causing, especially for someone who's trying to get into home ownership for the very first time. Somebody might have access to a down payment assistance program, but for a seller, it may be easier to go with a cash offer, or easier to pick a someone who's able to, skip some of the inspections or what have you. And it just, what struck me is how much that if we allow sort of market forces or the status quo to continue, things aren't going to get better. They're going to get much worse. And so proposals like this that aim to focus where our solutions need to be in terms of our home ownership equity gap, and ones that think outside the box, frankly, are super well received by me, and I think they should move forward. And so thank you for bringing the bill forward, Representative Hassan, and to the testifiers for all your work.
Thank you, Representative Howard. Representative Mr. Worth, do we have anyone else?
Madam Chair, Representative Agbaje has a question.
Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing this bill forward. I just want to continue to lend my support for it. I have also met with the testifiers before, and I'm really glad to see that, you know, hopefully that this is something that can come to fruition. It's especially needed in neighborhoods in my district. You know, I walk around and drive around and see, you know, the homes that could be available that are unused right now, that are left vacant. And so a program like this would really be helpful to the housing stock that we have to kind of save what we have and rehabilitate it and make sure that we do have affordable housing for more people across the state of Minnesota. So I'm really, again, grateful for that this bill is being brought forward. And I think it also speaks to the fact that it will help increase people's peace of mind during this time period to know that they have a safe and stable place to live. I recently had a town hall with Commissioner Ho and a director of Catholic Charities, and they talked extensively about how this is one of the main issues causing mental health crisis because people don't know where they're going to stay. So this is just a brief question. I don't know if maybe this was touched on already, but if one of the testifiers wants to just speak to the how many homes have you guys seen that would be affected by this program were it to be implemented, and how many do you think you could get up going right away?
Would that be for Ms. Kimmons or Mr. Grimmins?
Ms. Kimmons.
Kimmons? Ms. Kimmons?
Thank you. Thank you again, Madam Chair and Representative Agabe. I believe that what we have researched and found was there was a total of 700 vacant homes located in the city's department at the Community Planning and Economic Development. We would be able to do at least 20 of those homes and have those ready within, I would say, so far we've been doing that in 60 days. I would say, given the, if we added those 20 homes, we would need at least 90 days to get those operable and brought up to code. Again, we noticed that there was 700 vacant properties. However, West Havenbrook had, which is an out-of-town company, was able to come in and purchase 400 of those vacant homes and turn those homes over to Renters Warehouse. And that just really crippled North Minneapolis, because some people who are paying, they were paying like $900 for a two bedroom, are now paying $1,800, working two and three jobs per household. And that really kind of, it really gouged the rent, the pricing for people on affordability. And I said this to say that if you can pay that kind of money for rent, you should be able to get into a first-time home buyers, which also qualifies contract for deed for ownership. And so based on that, based on those numbers, based on what we've researched, there's 300 and some odd homes. I want to say 331 homes now sitting on the vacant list right now.
Representative Agbaje, follow up?
No,
thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Worth, any others?
Madam Chair, no other questions in the queue.
Representative Hassan, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for this opportunity to present to you to something that I think is an organic solution to a problem that is persistent and continue to be a challenge for all of us across the state. I think this program is unique in its own way. It's going to help stabilize communities. It's going to help youth. It's going to build and stabilize our neighborhoods. And also, not to mention the skyrocketing rent that people can't even afford. So with that, I ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. House File 1416 is laid over. Members, this is a time in the session when we start parking vehicles in different places. And you might see that the next two bills are authored in the Senate by Senator Dreheim, who chairs the Senate Housing Committee. And so we have a couple of vehicle bills just in case. And I'm going to now hand over the gavel to Representative Howard. Chair Howard.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. Would you like to move your bill?
I will move House File 2226 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Is there any discussion to this bill?
And Mr. Chair, just even though we aren't providing, the amount is yet to be determined and where this bill goes, but I thought just because the program is before us, I would say just a couple of sentences about this program. The Workforce and Affordable Homeownership Development Program was created in 2016 to help increase the amount of workforce and affordable homeownership projects throughout Minnesota. It was established to provide one-time grants for the development of this type of housing, serving households that make 115% of the area median income. As I said, we don't have an amount in here because it, at this point, is a vehicle.
Members, are there any questions? If not, then I think we can proceed to a vote.
I will renew my motion that House File 2226 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. Mr. Wilcox.
Howard?
Aye.
Hausman?
Aye.
Tice?
Aye.
Big Badger?
Aye.
Bliss, excuse. Gomez?
Aye.
Hassan? Hassan?
Hassan, aye.
Thank you. Heinrich?
Aye.
Herr?
Aye.
Juergens?
Juergens, aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Barr?
Aye.
And Ryer?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, that's 12 ayes and 0 nays.
Thank you, Mr. Wilcox. The bill is referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Hausman, you have the next bill as well.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will move that House File 2227 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Hausman moves that House File 227 be passed and referred to Ways and Means. Representative Hausman, to your bill.
Yes, I'll just speak briefly about the Challenge Program, which I believe was the idea of Representative Gunther from Southern Minnesota. I sort of recall that I've always given him credit for that. The Challenge Program was created in 1999 to address the workforce housing shortage across the state. This fund is one of the most flexible programs administered by MHFA and awards grants and deferred loans for a variety of eligible projects, including both rental and owner-occupied housing. The goal of the program is to help provide the workforce housing needed to enhance economic development. The program has income limits of 115% AMI for owner-occupied housing and 80% AMI for rentals. And as I said, no dollar amount in this bill.
Are there any questions for Representative Hausman? If not, would you like to renew your motion, Representative Hausman?
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 2227 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Howard?
Aye.
Hausman?
Aye.
Tice?
Aye.
Egbadje?
Aye.
Bliss, excuse. Gomez?
Aye.
Hassan?
Aye.
Heinrich?
Aye.
Herr?
Aye.
Juergens?
Juergens, aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Barr?
Aye.
Ryer?
Aye.
Mr. Chair, that's 12 ayes and 0 nays.
And the bill is passed and we referred to Ways and Means. That is the last bill on the agenda for today. So members, please look to your email for an announcement about our next meetings. And we believe that targets are coming out next week. So the legislature marches on. And with that, the committee is adjourned.